Session number 15433, Peter McAleish, part one.
Right, good morning, and thanks very much indeed for coming along to the Imperial War Museum. I think I've got to apologise because we had a number about five full starts on this one before you turned up here.
Yeah.
But anyway, we're here, and it's a sunny day. And thanks very much indeed for offering to go over your reminiscences and career. Can we just, I think the best thing is, could you just go over what you did in the, I mean, you know, years and which organisation you're with and where that was, who, what, when. So, I mean, you left school or whatever it was and then.
I left school in September 1957.
Okay.
Just
wait one. Go,
I left school in 1957 and I went to, I became an apprentice plasterer.
All right.
And then what happened then is I got into a bit of trouble and I had to leave the job I was in because I'd been off time through being in trouble, off work being through being in trouble.
Mm.
And from there I moved up to Aberdeen.
Mm.
And I worked in Aberdeen. I sort of ran away from home.
Mm.
And I worked in Aberdeen for about a year.
Mm.
And as soon as I was old enough, I joined the British Army in Aberdeen.
Mm.
I went to the recruiting office there, mm. and as I say, they tried to channel me into the Gordon Highlanders, and
mm.
I said, no, I want to go to the parachute regiment. I did from 1960 to 1969 in the British Army. Mm. And I did, of that, I did 3.5 years with the Special Air Service, the British Special Air Service.
Mm.
I came out of the Army in 1969. And I got involved in various projects. One was called the Hilton Assignment, which David Stillham was involved with. I was working in oil rigs, gas pipelines, and, you know, I was earning big money, but it didn't replace that sort of urge you had for the army, you know, for soldiering. I got involved with security in 1975. And in 1976, I got involved in the Angolan Civil War, which sort of I got my blood up again for the soldiering.
Right.
So I came back from Angola and I was at a loose end again.
Right. And that was when, roughly?
That was in 76.
Right.
In December of that year, I went to Rhodesia and joined the Rhodesian Army.
Right.
And I was there till 1980, mid-1980.
Right.
I joined from there. I joined the South African Parachute Regiment, which is the Pathfinder Company of it.
Mm.
And I was there till 1984. From 1984 to 1986, I worked in a sort of paramilitary security company
mm.
called Coin Security. I came back to this country in 86. I then spent a year working as a close protection officer in Uganda. That was 86, 87. 88, I became involved in Colombia for the first time.
Mm-hmm.
I went out 88 and then I went back 89
mm-hmm.
for the second time. And then I went back out for a third time in 91.
Mm-hmm.
Since 1992, I have been working at security again.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, that's a long and impressive career. Okay, so whereabouts, you're brought up whereabouts?
I was brought up in Shettleston, a district of Glasgow.
Uh-huh.
And there was a working class district, mm-hmm. but it was, you know, looking back now, it was a subculture. You know, people, you weren't measured in, a man's worth wasn't measured in how much he earned or his status with working that. It was how hard you were, how, you know, could you fight, couldn't you fight?
Mm.
And that's, you know, it's just the way it was.
Mm.
And, you know, there was a sort of pecking order of hard cases and everybody fitted in
mm.
along that pecking order. And
so how did you spend your youth
well, the,
and
you know,
childhood?
So the thing was to be the toughest guy in the school, you know, and I was constantly battling, fighting my way to the top. Put it down to lack of education, anything, but
yeah.
I eventually got what I wanted to get. And I came out and I sort of graduated onto, you know, the district I lived in. And to be honest, I got involved with gangs.
Mm.
And but I always had this urge to join a parachute regiment. You know, it was in me. I remember when I was a little kid, I followed is it all right to swear?
Probably.
No, I followed this paratrooper around Glasgow. I just said, the man, he looked extremely smart. And he had a parachute smock and bold boots. And I just followed him around the streets. And he said, what the fuck are you looking at? You know, and as I say, I was obsessed with it. And I think if I hadn't been for the army, I could have got myself into some serious trouble in Glasgow. But, you know, lucky, you know, the chain was broke.
Okay.
And the link, you know.
But how would that compare to today? I mean, was it sort of slightly mild fighting, or was it bottles and bricks?
No, it was, I mean...
Knives
was,
and the whole thing.
No, we were sort of into maiming each other, you know.
All right.
And it was the... You know, the district I came from, they weren't so much into slashing each other or anything like that, but, you know, the blunt objects, anything you can get your hands on.
Mm.
You'd probably, you know, hit someone with it. And, you know, the other thing was, and looking back at it now, and even when I go back there now, an argument actually began when, you know, somebody would say, like, I see Celtic one today. And that was the beginning of the argument. Can you see that? There wasn't, it never developed, and the argument was on when, you know, that. And when I came to England, I looked at Englishmen, and they could actually pursue a dispute through and bring it to an end, whereas where I came from, it was, you know, you were straight in with the head down, you know, as soon as the first word was mentioned, it was go for it, you know. I go back there and the guys are still living the same, you know, it's still the same as that. Yeah, there's probably maybe a bit more violence now, you get drugs and things like that, as I say, that's the way it was when I was there.
So you finished school, and then you did this plastering and so forth, and then you moved away to
Aberdeen.
So did you keep contact with your family, or?
I used to write, the odd letter. I've always been fairly close to my mother, I lived up there for a year, and it was getting away from home. I was doing my own thing. I worked in the fish market there, and I just. You know, I looked at it, and as soon as I was 17 and a half, I said, the army, you know. And
how do you find the atmosphere in Aberdeen?
Oh, it was lovely. You know, compared with Glasgow, it was, you know, at that time, there wasn't the violence. And the other thing is you could go to a dance hall, and, you know, you'd get the odd fight in a dance hall, but generally speaking, people were out to enjoy themselves and have a good night out.
Mm.
So, you know, it was a lot tamer. And, you know, I found the people there. I really like, even to this day, I like Aberdonian people, you know. And, you know, I've still got friends there from when I was 16 years old. Yeah, who I keep in contact.
You were only there for a year or so.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. I made friends with a chap called Jim Tarris.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, for example, last Sunday I phoned Jim. And, you know, if I'm over in Aberdeen, I pop in and see him.
Right.
You
know? And, I mean, in Glasgow, I mean, where you were, there were basically fights all the time. And
well, you know, you'd
pubs,
you'd
dance halls, and the street. Or
well, you know, you had areas of turf. You know, and you know, like the I was involved with the Kenmore Street chaps, and you know, about four streets down from us, nobody ventured over that, and we didn't venture over it. And in actual fact, you know, when I look at it now, there was a total lack of enlightenment and behaviour. I mean, you know, how can I tell you? That where I came from, it wasn't frowned upon. It was normal for somebody to carry a weapon. How can I explain that to a person who's never done it? It was normal to carry a weapon. We used to call it being tooled up. And, you know, we had various, bits of equipment, you know, for hitting other people. You know, when I think of it now.
Like what? I mean.
You know, like, you know, we'd have one of these toilet chains, you know, the old heavy toilet chains with a handle, you know, you could sort of flail with it. And one guy got to the stage where he put a ball of lead on the end of it. And, you know, if he'd hit anybody with this, but, you know, the fact is he carried it. Now, eventually, somebody would have got hit with it. Another favourite weapon was the old army bayonets, you know, the big heavy ones, the big 18-inch things. And, you know, when I think, you know, you'd see a guy limping along the road, you know, and he'd have this thing down the leg of his trousers, you know. and, you know, there was terrible... it was a pressure that you wouldn't understand. I mean, you know, it was perfectly normal to have scars on your face. You know, that was your history. Can you see
so you
that?
You don't have any scar from it?
You know, one in the head.
One that's a small one.
Yeah. Yes. But, you know, the... I went to school with a guy, and, you know, the... You don't have to believe this, but you actually slashed yourself down the side of the cheek so it looked tough. And, you know, I come back now, I think about it now. You know, in actual fact, I've been in Africa, I've seen primitive tribes. In actual fact, it existed here in the streets of England or the streets of Britain, you know. Yeah.
Did you get many friends were hurt at that stage? Or
no, we used to, we get beatings and that, you know. And in actual fact, there was very few, although we were flailing at each other, it was all around about the shoulders and the arms and that. I got myself hurt one day. I chopped my arms with a sort of bayonet and smashed it, my elbows open with it. And there was that, and you got the odd cut in the head. And, you know, we didn't have anything to do. I mean, the police would come along to us and say, you know, you'd be standing at the corner and all talking to each other. And they'd say to you, why are you standing at the corner? You know, say I've got nothing to do. Why don't you go to the youth club? There is no youth club. Can you see that? And all we had at that time was cafes. You know, and in actual fact, in a lot of ways, it was better, because when you left school, people went to the cafe and we drank coffee and tea and soft drinks and that until you were, you know, old enough to go to a pub. You know, so there was that little grown up period in between, and that was there. And the other thing I used to notice about the district was, National Service was on, and when the boys went away to the army, they came back and they were immaculate, you know, they sort of filled out and they looked great. And then, you know, a couple of years later, you'd see them, you know, with the drinking and, you know, their minds had gone, you know, they were back. And in actual fact, they went away to the army, performed for 2 years, and then came back and just carried on as if they hadn't been away.
Went to seed.
Yeah.
But you weren't called up?
No, I wasn't. I, in actual fact, my brother was one of the last National Servicemen. My brother and I ran away from home together.
Oh.
Right, and my brother had just finished his time as a plasterer. Mm-hmm. He'd just finished his apprenticeship. So he went to sign on the dole. And I says, well, we've got a job for you, you know. It's for 2 years. And he says, that's great. He's been called up for the army. In actual fact, he was extremely resentful about it, because it was the last batch of National Servicemen to get called up, you know. And he thought he'd actually missed it.
So what, that was when, 1959 or something?
59,
like
that was, yeah. And he went to the Ordnance Corps. And he hated it, you know.
Why precisely, what did he hate the most about it, or what did he like it?
Well, just as he'd served an apprenticeship, and he got his first man's pay, which I think it was, he was on bonus. And Billy was an awful hard worker, you know, a real, you know, throwing the stuff on the wall. And I think he got about £15 of a pay, you know, and this was it. You know, he'd made manhood, and then all of a sudden he went into the army and got £1, you know. And then, you know, sort of barrack room damages off it, you know, you clear 10 shillings or something, you know. He saw it as a waste of time, you know. But he looks back now and, you know, he laughs about it, you know. That's all part of growing up, I think. Mm.
Oh, what, he went to England or wherever? Where did he go?
He came out of the army, and he came down and worked in England for about 2 years, then came back to Scotland, got married.
Okay, yeah. But he got posted in England, was what I was going
to say. No, he came here, and he went to Blackdown with the army, the depot. And, you know, one of the things I always remember him, you know, it could only happen in a National Service Army. We've got two postings. The people who want to go to Germany stand this side. The people who want to go to Singapore stand this side. Okay, you will go to Germany, you will go to Singapore. And in actual fact, I think he wanted to go to Singapore, you know, and finished up in Germany. Yeah.
So he enjoyed it. I mean, he
you know, he reminisces about it now, but at the time, he reckoned it was horrendous,
right,
you know.
Right. So, 1960 in Aberdeen.
Yeah.
You wind up in the... in the recruitment office.
Yeah, in Market Street in Aberdeen, yeah.
And you say, I want to join the army.
Yeah.
And they said...
Yeah, so I got into the recruiting office, and the guy was a Gordon Highlander. He looked really smart, and he had the little light bulb on his jacket here. You know, he'd done the parachute course only. And he says, you ever thought of joining the Gordon Highlanders? I says, no, I want to join the parachute regiment. He went, well, yeah, fair enough. He sort of rubbed this little light bulb, and he pushed me off to the parachute regiment. The following week, I was on the train to Aldershot. It took a week.
Mm. And so what, you hang around in Aberdeen for a
while? Yeah. And,
they didn't put you in a barracks, did they?
No. They just said, come, they come up. They said, you're employed, and they gave me a week's money, and they, you know, in front, and they said, come up, and they paid me some more money and a train ticket to Aldershot, and I took this journey into the unknown, you know.
And so that was a sleeper or whatever it was.
No, it wasn't. It was the old, you know, the head going like that all the way down to Aldershot.
Right.
And I arrived there, and I came out of the station, and it was, you know, you've got to understand, I was only 17 years old, and I came out and I seen
You had to go through London.
Yes, I went through London.
Right, okay. And Waterloo, been there before.
Waterloo Station, and it was all, and you know, there's, you arrive at King's Cross, and I've got to go through the tube, you know, and you know, I really felt I'd made the grade, because people who'd been to London always spoke about the tube, you know, and so I get on the tube, managed to get to Waterloo Station, and get onto Aldershot, and the funny thing was, I just knew about the British Army, and I knew about Scottish regiments, and I come walking out the station at Aldershot, and I see a chap with the, you know, army uniform, and he's got green jackets written on it. And I, you know, I'm saying, you know, there's not a regiment called, you know, Green Jackets. See, that's a strange name for, you know. And I said, I wonder what it means. You know, that's how naive I was about the army. I knew about the parachute regiment. I knew about the Highland Light Infantry. I knew about the Black Watch, the Argylls, but, you know, nothing to do with sort of English regiment.
Yeah.
And, you know, when I used to talk to Scottish soldiers about English soldiers, you know, I'd say, you know, What like is it in the Highland Light Infantry? We are the best, and stay away from the mash. They used to call them mash eaters, English soldiers. You know why? I don't know where it came from. Yeah. And
else did they say?
Their motivation was, you know, we are better than Englishmen. Can you see that? Yeah. That you know, it's the old army bullshit you get. Is, you know, like, in order to make it to keep your soldiers together, you know, you're really, you know, you create a fictitious enemy for them, you know. In this case, it was the English. And to be honest with you, I'm glad I never joined the Scottish regiment. Mm. You know, because the parachute regiment, you couldn't get more cosmopolitan than that.
Mm. It's recruited nationally.
Yeah.
So, you wound up at Aldershot Station, and then?
Yeah. I walked into the parachute regiment depot, and I seen all these immaculate people. I mean, everybody, but there was a sense of purpose, you know, and, you know, I'm talking about at that time, and I look at it and I say, that's insanity. Can you see that? You know, how did I ever come through that? You know, everybody seemed like the sort of wacky races with people zooming past in every direction. Nobody seemed to walk or stroll. I got in there, and, you know, I got sent to this platoon that was getting squatted, and the corporal says, come on in, son, right, there's your bed. Let me show you how to make your bed, and he showed it. And I says, these guys are terrific. Honestly, they were really helpful. Come on, let me show you how to do your locker. You get your socks, that's how you fold your socks from it. Now, that's the width all your kit's got to be. And, you know, there was a couple of re-enlistments, and we'd say, how do you do this? And, oh, they were right onto the kit straight away, getting it immaculate. And, you know, and I met, none of us could understand each other. There was broad Geordie accents, broad sand. And there was one guy from Edinburgh called Don Levy, you know. And you go, yeah, it was like sort of Rapsinis, but, you know, there was all the accents, and actually, like, you actually notice in the parachute regiment, you know, you get all the different accents, and it comes in together, and you get that military jargon, you know, and everybody is understood then. But at first, I mean, you know, you're looking at the guy, you don't know what they're saying, and you're saying, I can't understand that one, but he can't understand you either, you know.
that went on, and it was a problem, was it?
No, it was. Well. The accents were really broad, and then we got used to each other. I'd never heard a Geordie speaking. Mm. I'd never heard a Londoner speaking. I mean, to me, a strange accent was Aberdeen, you know, being a Glasgow person. Mm. So, as I say, that was the most noticeable thing when I went in, and these marvellous corporals. And I remember I wrote a letter to my mother. I says, Ma, you know, I'm in the army. They didn't know I'd joined. I'm in the army. and I've, you know, and I've got this lovely, marvellous corporal who's really looking after me, and he's taking me under his wing, you know. So that was for the first 2 weeks. And then they said, you know, you're going to start training Monday morning, you know. So they got us there and said, right, you know, it's a brand new ball game Monday, and yeah, we're going, yes, corporal. And you give it everything you've got, and they were on about the parachute regiment attitude, you know. They're looking for men with attitude. It was always came in wrong attitude, right attitude. And Monday morning, the door opened about sort of 5:30, and a dustbin lid came down the middle of the floor, and these people who had been my sort of best friends had suddenly taken attacks of insanity, you know. And came in and, pardon me, started rousing us around, you know. And there was sort of a state of mass hysteria for about the next 6 weeks, you know, until we settled into it. There was just never any time to yourself. It was constantly changing kit. You know, you've got 3 minutes to change into your PT, get out. You get 2 minutes to get into, you know, your battle dress, get, you know, everything. It was just on the go the whole time. And, you know, and we used to go on about, they're putting bromide in your tea, you know, so it, honestly, they didn't need to put it in your tea because you were shattered all the time. You never get any time to yourself. And then you had to come in at night time, start on your kit. And it was probably, you probably finished about 10 o'clock at night. And
so what time did you kick off or start off?
Well, they used to wake us about 5:30, and you'd always get guys that was up before that, and we were only, again, we'd only be kids, and we used to, there'd be an inspection every Saturday morning, and, you know, we'd do things like, it was insane, really. We'd make our bed up for the inspection and Saturday morning, and sleep on the floor, you know. But, you know, you get the old soldiers, they get in their bed, and they could knock their bed up in about 2 minutes, you know, just put all the stuff in the right place. We'd be up all night. The lights went out at 10 o'clock. So, you know, I've seen guys, you know, we were only recruits, with a candle, sitting at candlelight, building their boots to get it ready for the next morning. And it was really fantastic because, you know, and you started filling out. I mean, I went there, I was only about 9 stone, you know, when I finished training, I was 10 stone 10.
Right.
So, you know, as I say, they constantly kept you at it. And the other thing is I was shown nothing but example in that depot. I mean, I was very fortunate in that through my whole career, most of the NCOs I had were good. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I say, the training went on for 10 weeks. It was just, and I was extremely fit. The furthest I ever was back in a run was sort of second. But I got it all wrong. And I thought fitness was being a parachute soldier. You know, I thought I could skip certain things, and you can't. And
had you always been fit, you reckon? Or did you
dance
sports
at
school?
Oh yeah, I was always into running at school, and I did a bit of boxing, and I was always generally fit. And I never found it was strenuous all the time. But, you know, like, and you were always trying to keep up. What they used to do is they'd have two platoons squadded together, and the competition between them was fierce. And one would be, say, a week ahead of the other one, and they'd come into the sort of kitchen or the cookhouse with a big white mug. You haven't done the 10-mile run yet. You haven't done the trinasium. And you always felt that you had to, you know, catch up with these guys. You know, it was a good thing because you had tons of competitive spirit, and your troop sergeant would get you and he's going, you know, beat this platoon, you know, you've got to go ahead of them. So there was a constant pushing for, you know, standards.
What about discipline and all that sort of thing? And
The discipline was... The thing about the parachute regiment is, do you know something? I was never sworn at there. You know, like the seems to be quite a bit of swearing in the army now. But I went through the depot and I was always treated extremely firm, but extremely fair with it. And at times, like, I mean, you used to get a telling off, you know, and the guy would be right up and he'd walk away. Just strut off, and you know, you sort of wipe the saliva off your face and carry on. we were training, yeah.
What about people getting binned and all that sort of
stuff? Well, the attrition rate was, you know, there were dropouts all over the place, you know, and you could see that what happened, the more people that seemed to get binned, that the more the hardcore stuck together. Can you see that? You know, you're clinging, and you know, the people get binned for various reasons, and some of them bin themselves. Can you see that? They say, this is not for me. And some people transfer to other regiments, and guy says, no, I'm getting out, you know. So I can't give you any figures. You know, forgotten. I just know
what
that.
What was it? What about there a was quarter or?
There was probably about a third of us left. That was the end of basic training. Yeah,
two thirds didn't make it.
Yeah.
And what about whacking people to make sure that they didn't lose attention and that sort of thing?
No. I was never actually hit there. But the thing about them is they had other ways of doing it. They attacked you psychologically, and you see that. And they just keep you, so you get up the stairs, change into such and such, get up the chairs. So they didn't actually, yeah. They'd keep changing, you'd do kit changes all the time. And if you messed them up out, they would mess you about. Mm. They'd come back, they'd say, we're going to have an inspection at 7 o'clock, not good enough, we'll be back at 8 o'clock, not good enough, we'll be back at 9. Mm. I never witnessed anybody getting struck when I went through the depot. It may have been a different era, it may have just been my platoon, but I never actually saw it.
Right. So what did you find, I mean, out of the Trinasium and all this sort of the 10-mile run and all the rest of it, and the Queen Mary, isn't it, or the assault course?
Oh, the assault course, yeah.
Yeah, which with the log and all the rest of it, what did you like or dislike the most out of that?
In fact, anything that was physical, I loved it. I mean, the assault course, I used to get down there on a Saturday afternoon, and what I used to do was pace it all out, and I say, I need to get three big steps to get over this. You know, there was a 6 feet wall, and I knew that I could step leap from so-and-so, and I did the whole lot of the Trinasium before I actually done them. Can you see that? I went down there on a Saturday afternoon and done it. So I was always messing about in the assault course. So, and it was, I wanted to be good, but, yeah.
Oh, sure, okay.
Yeah.
So you're working from 5 till 10, that what, 6 days a week or?
No, and a Saturday you finish about 1 o'clock, between 12 and 1.
So 5.5 days a week, 3 months or something like that.
Yeah.
What about fights between the blokes and so forth?
There was, once the NCOs went away, you know, you got I had about two fights in the depot, mm-hmm. and it was with the same chap, and, you know, after it, you know, we actually became friends. It was, I mean, you're living with, say, 40 men in a billet. You know, something's got to give. You know? And they, you know, we all came from different backgrounds, different cultures. And I had one incident in the depot there. I was only 7 weeks in the army, and I actually been with a chap.
But in what
way? I was on guard, and I'd only done 7 weeks in the army. And I was marching. There's a certain way you carry your rifle. I did. You had to carry it across with your bayonet on it. Got. Mm. And this chap came up and he said to me, are you one of them paratroopers? You know, and I knew the chap. I think he was in three para. In fact, he was in three para. And he said, I bet you do a lot on armed combat, don't you? You're a red, you know, this sort of, you're a red devil, aren't you? And he was taking the mickey of him. He was drunk. And I said, look, please leave me alone. I've only been 7 weeks in the army. And, you know, there was a dance at Maida, and three para was and having a dance, and the sort of, he got himself a little bit of an audience, you know. And he said, come on, show me how to use the bayonet. Come on, you know, show me. You know, you're a paratrooper, you know how to use the bayonet. So I bayoneted him through the arm, and it went through his arm and stuck in his chest. And the next thing is...
What happened there?
Three para attacked us, a big group of three para, you know, and they're going, we're not going to be treated like this by recruits anyway.
This was outside the guard room, you're on guard.
This is down the road from the guard room, because we had to patrol the whole depot. Yeah. And the chase is all into the guard room with an officer from the education corps in charge of us, you know. He was the orderly officer, and he's going, right, chaps, six bayonets, you know, and he brings the rest of the guard out, so the chase is all into the guard room.
So you're there with this education corps officer and the rest of the guard.
And we're all in the guard room. Anyway, next morning I said, oh, I'm going to get it here, you know, I've done wrong. I was marched in to see the colonel commandant, or the colonel of the airborne forces depot, and I marched in. They just looked at me, and he started, whenever the red berry is seen in the field, it at once inspires confidence because its wearers are known to be good men and true. I started from the desk. This is the type of man we need in a regiment. Can think for himself. I mean, I went in there, I thought I was going to get the neck. Anyway, I came through the door, I just sort of turned my head sideways to get through, you know. And he said to me, well done. And, of course, they got the guy that done it, and they locked him up for 56 days, you know.
For being bayoneted.
For being bayoneted.
And what then did he do? What did he do when you stuck the bayonet through his arm?
He couldn't believe it. He went, he stabbed me. He sort of had this, his mouth became a gape.
Yeah.
And another chap came at me. A whole gang of them got round me, and I sort of slashed with the bayonet. I took the edge off a chap's ear. In actual fact, the guy who I took the edge off his ear, I actually became friendly with him, you know, and the whole lot of them, it was just guys in the free party who'd get drunk, and the whole lot of them finished up in the nick, you know.
But, unbelievable.
I mean, at that time, what you've got to understand, the whole brigade was together. Huh. You know, you had a depot there, and a Thursday night, the guys used to get paid. And it's, let's go and wind up the recruits, and they'd maybe come back off an exercise, and you'd be lying in your bed, and a sort of thunder flash would come through the window on top of your blanket, boom. And it was just their way of letting steam off on a Thursday, you know.
Right. And so, at that time, where was all the parachute depot in Aldershot?
It was at Maida Barracks, right?
Oh,
and
yes.
Then... I think the three para were at Kenora.
Compared to where it is now?
It was nearer Aldershot.
All right.
Now, you've still got the original part of Maida Barracks there yet. Now, where Normandy Barracks and that is, they were old Victorian barracks.
And they pulled...
Aye, hmm. And they pulled them down and put new barracks in there.
Which is, well, until recently, the depot.
Yeah.